at That's Real Radio.
When Social Security was introduced 85 years ago, Americans had much shorter lifespans, and many workers relied on guaranteed pensions for retirement income. But those days are long gone. Social Security benefits have become far more important to the average retiree than was ever intended, but many workers fail to make the most of them. Today, financial planner and teacher Rob West shares some ways to increase those benefits. Then it's your calls on anything financial, anything at all, 800-525-7000, 800-525-7000. I'm Steve Moore, and welcome to MoneyWise Live. All right, Rob, if you don't mind, set the stage for us here. How exactly has the landscape changed for Social Security over the years?
Well, you already mentioned that in 1935, when the program was introduced, pensions were common and provided guaranteed retirement income for as long as you lived. You know, you'd stay in a job forever, you'd get a gold watch and a check for life. Now, I can't help but think that one of the reasons employers no longer provide pensions is because the average lifespan of Americans has increased considerably over the years. In 1935, it was around 60 years. Get this, today, more than 79 years. Years is the typical. The result is Americans now need many more years of retirement income. And studies show that if workers were allowed to conservatively invest the same amount of money they contribute to Social Security, well, they'd be far ahead at retirement. All of which is to say you need to make the most of your potential Social Security benefits. And the reason I say potential is because decisions you make can raise or lower those benefits.
That's right. And how exactly do you make the most of your Social Security benefits? What do you do? What do you not do?
Well, there are many things you can do, but some of them are fairly complex and only apply to certain people. But we have five that everyone should be able to do. And number one is make sure you work a full 35 years. That's because the Social Security Administration uses your highest 35 years of earnings to determine your level of benefits. Any years less than 35 count as zeros and factor in to lower your benefits. If you work more than 35 years, though, each additional year of higher earnings replace one of the lower earnings, and the net result is a higher monthly benefit.
Yeah, that's really critical. Good to know. What's next?
Well, our second tip, Steve, is to actually work more as you near retirement. You see, after age 60, your earnings count more, and they have a greater positive impact on your benefits. Sometimes people scale back work as they near retirement, but that can actually lower your benefits. So if possible, work more hours after age 60 until you retire, not fewer.
Yeah, and I don't think many people are really aware of that one, so that's really critical. And that's why we're telling them about it, right?
Well, that's exactly right. All right, let's dive into number three, and we've talked about this one several times. Delay benefits until you reach at least your full retirement age, which for most people working today is 66. Every year that you delay receiving benefits beyond your full retirement age, well, you increase your benefit by 8% a year. And every year after age 62 that you elect to receive benefits, but before your full retirement age, well, that'll cost you 8% in benefits. But let's look at the reward for waiting. Let's say you're eligible to receive $2,000 a month at age 66. By waiting until age 70 to receive benefits, that monthly amount would increase from $2,000 to $2,640. That's a 32% gain.
Yeah, that's pretty hefty. And all you have to do is just live long enough to get that increase.
That's exactly right. It's a calculated risk. But remember, people are living much longer these days. Remember that life expectancy I said? It actually jumps up to 82 and 83 for men and women, respectively, once you reach age 65. So that number is pretty high. All right, let's do tip number four. This one's for married couples. Delay your benefits while claiming those of your spouse. You see, if you and your spouse have both reached full retirement age, go ahead and claim spousal benefits, but let yours continue to grow until you reach age 70. That way, in a sense, you get the best of both worlds by receiving some benefits now and then more later.
Okay, and I think we have time left for tip number five.
Yep, that would be watch out for taxes on your Social Security benefits. If you continue to work after you begin receiving benefits, anywhere from 50 to 85% of those benefits could be counted as taxable income. The IRS uses a fairly complicated formula to determine what percentage of your Social Security income is taxable. But in simple terms, the more you can spread out income from other sources, the better off you'll be. And I'll give you an example of that right around the corner.
All right, good deal. And right around the corner, we're taking your phone calls today on anything financial, anything at all, 800-525-7000. We're waiting for you.
Do you know if you have enough? Enough money? Enough house? Do you know how much is enough? If not, Ron Blue can help with his book, Master Your Money, a step-by-step plan for experiencing financial contentment. Learn how to save, invest, and give wisely, how to create a long-term financial plan, and how to get out of debt. You'll find it all in Master Your Money by Ron Blue. Available when you click the store button at moneywiselive.org.
When it comes to investing guidance, you want advice grounded in God's Word. That's the approach offered by Sound Mind Investing. SMI has helped tens of thousands of Christians acquire investing wisdom and confidence. Regardless of your investing experience or how much you have to invest, you can learn to be a wise and faithful steward in the area of investing. A short video webinar on profit and peace of mind is available now at soundmindinvesting.org.
And now, a discipleship moment. Here's Phil Downer.
I just love life, Phil, and so what's wrong with that? You know, my friend I was discipling really had me. Yeah, what is wrong with that? Well, I prayed quickly, and I'm sure my next thought came from God. Okay, Stan, let's read 1 John 2:15, where it says, "Do not love the world, nor the things in the world. If anyone loves the world, the love of the Father is not in him." And then I asked of both Stan and myself, do we love God more than what he's given to us? Oh, I've got it. It's all about loving God. Right, I said. So, friend, we can enjoy what he's given to us, but we need to love God first and foremost with all our heart. The question is, friend, do we?
An Eternal Impact Men's Retreat with Phil Downer can give new direction and motivation for discipling other men. For more information, go to downer.org.
If the heavy burden of debt is robbing you of freedom and peace of mind, Christian Credit Counselors can help. We're a nationwide nonprofit credit counseling organization that has helped over 300,000 individuals in the last 27 years get out of credit card debt 80% faster while honoring that debt in full. To learn how Christian Credit Counselors can help you, visit ChristianCreditCounselors.org. That's ChristianCreditCounselors.org or call 800-557-1985.
Hey, if you happen to have a question about, maybe debt or insurance, giving, housing, saving, any of those kinds of things, well, more than likely, the Bible has some input as in regards to those topics. So give us a call today. Maybe we can help you with that. 800-525-7000. Again, toll free, 800-525-7000. And for a couple of minutes today, we're talking a bit about Social Security and how you can maximize your benefits. Any further information for us, Rob?
Just an example of what we were talking about there just a moment ago, Steve, when we say if you continue to work after you begin receiving benefits, you could have a reduction of anywhere from 50 to 85% of those benefits in that it would be counted as taxable income. Mm. The IRS uses a formula to determine what percentage of your Social Security income is taxable. But in simple terms, the more you can spread out income from other sources, the better off you'll be. Here's an example. The recent Secure Act delayed the age at which you have to take the required minimum distribution for your IRA. Mm-hmm. So it went from 70 and a half to 72. Well, that means that potentially you could have 6 years in which your Social Security benefits aren't taxed at all if you delay taking distributions during that time. So that would be one way to do it. I also think a good idea is to consult with a financial advisor on the best ways to minimize your tax liability during retirement. We, of course, recommend that you see a certified Kingdom advisor. This would be somebody who has the experience and training, competency, but also shares your values. And you can find one by going to MoneyWiseLive.org. Just click on Find a CKA.
Okay, good information. Taxing, Social Security benefits, the government giveth, and yes, the government taketh away. All right, here's our phone number one more time, 800-525-7000. Anything that's of concern to you, let me try that again. Anything that's of concern to you financially is of interest to us, so give us a call right now. Chicago, Illinois. Hello, Tammy. What's your question today?
Hi. My question is, what does it mean to be 100% vested?
Yeah, according to the IRS, Tammy, vesting in a retirement plan means ownership. So basically, it means that each employee will vest or own a certain percentage of their account in the plan each year. So an employee who is 100% vested in their account, it means they own essentially 100% of that account. And the employer can't forfeit, take back, that amount for any reason. And so basically it's based on the years of service and based on your particular plan. And it requires you are there working for a certain number of years in order for you to have full access to the retirement plan that is there. And so once you reach that 100% vested status, you have full access, or you could say ownership, of that account. Does that make sense?
Yes, it does. And so does that mean that you will continue to receive money from your employer?
Oh, yes, absolutely. You'll continue to get contributions on whatever schedule they were already making contributions. It's just now that you have 100% ownership of whatever's in there and whatever continues to go in there. Prior to that 100% vesting, you didn't have access to all of that money because you hadn't met the vesting schedule to reach 100%.
Okay, Tammy? All right.
Yes, thank you.
We appreciate your call. Thanks very much. Oaklawn, Illinois. Hey, Christian, you're on with Rob West.
Oh, hi. Thank you very much once again for answering my call and taking my call.
Happy to.
I called before. I'm sorry. I just wanted to just touch base back with I'm in the process of refinancing my house from a 30-year to 15-year. I'm at the 3.75 interest mark right now for the third-year conventional. So I had three questions just real quick. The first one is they already did a hard credit check with my bank trying to see what they can do for me. And since they did that, to my understanding, is do I have 14 days left to shop around, and will that affect my credit if I do so? And
yes.
The other one is, if I don't go with the refinancing, how much could I pay to the principal extra, the most that I could pay to bring down years on a 30-year if they don't offer me a good interest?
Yes. Well, Christian, to your first question, you're speaking about the impact of your credit check on your credit score. So whenever you're shopping for a new loan, whether it's a mortgage or you've applied for a credit card, where you're out there seeking that credit, not somebody making what's called a soft inquiry because they want to offer you something, try to sell you something, but where you initiate the credit check based on credit you're seeking, they do lump those inquiries for the same type of credit into one over a 14-day period. And what basically that allows you to do is say, okay, for the next 14 days, I'm going to go and shop the best lender for this car loan or the best lender for this mortgage. And all of those inquiries over that 14-day period for that same type of loan are going to be considered one inquiry. And so you want to maximize that period of time because inquiries, hard inquiries that happen even for the same type of transaction after that 14-day are going to be another inquiry, hard inquiry on your credit, which is going to further reduce your score. And the challenge there is it's not long term because the score will come back. The challenge is if you're right there on the threshold of meeting a certain minimum score to qualify for a certain rate or terms and that additional inquiry after 14 days pulls you down below that threshold, you may no longer qualify for the terms you did just a week before because they required a 740 and now your score dipped down to 735, for example. So I think it's really important to be ready to move, know which creditor or which lenders you're going to be applying or seeking credit with so you can maximize that 14-day window. As to the principal reduction, Christian, I think the key is, I mean, you can reduce as much principal as you want at any time. That's what's great about a mortgage with an amortized loan. It's in effect simple interest because the interest is determined in advance. You're not paying interest on interest. But here's the key. At any time, you can make a payment directly to principal. The key is you just have to do that in light of your cash flow, your current expenses, and your other goals and priorities. I want you to get out of debt as quickly as you can, but I also recognize you have limited resources and competing priorities. Financial decisions and goals are simultaneous. They're happening at the same time. So did that get, though, to the heart of your question on the principal reduction, or were you asking about something else?
No, you pretty much did. And yes, my score is at 820, so it dropped down to 4 points. And yeah, I wasn't sure if I could shop around. But now that you pointed that out, I mean, I guess I could shop around, but knowing that they're going to drop them, but it won't be that long, I think I'll still be in good stand. I'll check with one more and make my decision on that.
Well, let me encourage you here first, Christian. You got an 820. That's a phenomenal score. I mean, you will be able to qualify for the best terms and rates at just about probably every lender you apply with. And even a second inquiry is not going to pull you down below what you're looking for. So well done on having a good score. I would absolutely shop it. I'd look for at least three. And whoever you've checked with, I'd probably go to bankrate.com and find a couple of additional lenders because week to week, some of them have better programs than others. You should be able to knock a point off of that rate and have this make sense to you as long as you're going to stay in that home for at least 5 years with no problem, given that you're at 3.75 right now. So shop around, take advantage of these historic lows. But one last thing, don't extend the term if you can make that possible.
Christian, good to hear from you. It sounds like you're really heading in the right direction. We wish you the very best. Let's go to Ohio next. And Sharon, you have a question about, your Social Security, huh?
Yes. My husband retired about 8 years ago. He's 75. I just turned 70 in July. I'm still working full time, a whole lot of hours full time. So do I need to start withdrawing from Social Security?
Yeah, you actually do not. You don't have to begin collecting at age 70, but your benefit will not increase if you delay past your 70th birthday. So I would go ahead and start taking those benefits because there's not a real significant reason to wait because you're not going to be increasing any further than you already have once you reach age 70.
Okay, I would be able to just invest that money then since I'm not going to really be using it.
That's exactly right.
It right now.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. Is there a limit of the amount I can take out? How often should I do it every quarterly or a little every month withdraw so much?
Well, your Social Security benefits will come as a monthly check. You won't withdraw those. It will just come as a benefit in the mail.
Sharon. We hope that helps you. Thank you very much. Sounds like you're in a good position as well. And she can continue to work and collect Social Security at the same time. Right, Rob?
That's exactly right. Once you reach full retirement age, absolutely. She doesn't have any issue there.
All right, great. And there's no issue if you'd like to give us a call and chat today. Anything financial, 800-525-7000. You're listening to MoneyWise with Rob West. I'm Steve Moore, back with more right after this.
God cares a great deal more about our money than most of us imagine. In fact, Jesus says more about our use of money and possessions than about anything else, including both heaven and hell. In Managing God's Money, author Randy Alcorn breaks it all down in a simple, easy-to-follow format that makes it the perfect reference tool if you're interested in gaining a solid biblical understanding of money, possessions, and eternity. Managing God's Money is available when you click the store button at moneywiselive.org.
Hebrews 4:12 says, "For the word of God is quick and powerful and sharper than any two-edged sword." Here's Beth Moore with a quick word.
How often does God use our pain to birth our passion? If you got a godly passion about something, if God's made you passionate about something, I'd love to know where that thing rooted. Because I'm just going to tell you, if I were a betting woman, I bet you 99 times out of 100, it came from some kind of pain. Do you know why I'm in a ministry of the Word? Because my mind, I'm telling you, I've told you before, I had a broken mind. Had a book mind, but I'm telling you, my emotional mind was in pieces, and it wouldn't have been long until every single thing would have gone with it. My worst nightmare, the worst crisis I've ever been through in my early 30s, when I went through such intensity with God, and what came out of that, God healed my mind with His Word. Before I even knew my mind was broken, I had begun to, God had begun to light a fire of love for His Word. And little by little, before I even realized how broken my mind was, God was already putting it back together. God was already rebuilding my mind. God's Word completely rebuilt my mind. I do not have that broken mind anymore. I mean, I may be a nut, but I'm a healthy nut. Yeah, I'm a health nut. Amen.
Beth is dedicated to encouraging people to come to know and love Jesus Christ through the study of Scripture. Why wait? Click online today. Pick a podcast or television teaching or both. Just visit BethMoore.org. That's BethMoore.org, or download the Living Proof app. Search for Beth Moore in your app store. See you next time for another Quick Word with Beth Moore.
Would you like your life to be infused with joy? Would you like to interject an eternal dimension into even the most ordinary day? Author Randy Alcorn says you can when you discover the Treasure Principle. In a concise, power-packed style, this newly revised and updated book offers a six-step plan to finding the immediate pleasure and eternal rewards of the Treasure Principle. And once you discover it, life will never look the same. The Treasure Principle is available when you click the store button at moneywiselive.org.
It's MoneyWise Live. Rob West taking your calls today. And Rob, just before the break, we were speaking with Sharon, who at age 70 was still working. She was wondering about taking Social Security. You had a follow-up you wanted to add?
Well, yeah. You know, there is one way, though, that she could see an increase in benefits. She's not going to continue to see that automatic 8% a year increase that you receive past full retirement age up mm-hmm. until age 70. But keep in mind, if you're replacing any of your years, 35 years, with higher earnings, then you could actually see an increase in your benefits. So that would be one reason to wait. And it really would just come down to, is what she's earning now higher than any of the earnings years she had over these 35 years that are being used to calculate? If so, she could certainly continue to do that. But she'd probably want to visit with her Social Security Administration office to compare what she'd be giving up in terms of not taking that payment, which she said appropriately she could start investing, versus the increase. I don't think there's going to be enough of a reason to do that. I think it's probably going to be better to go ahead and start claiming it so she can put that money aside. But I did want to make sure that she knew that there is technically a way that the benefits could increase.
Yeah, good call, Rob. Thank you very much. Let's go to Austin, Texas now. And Alicia, how can we help you?
Hi, thank you so much for taking my call. Thank you for all that you do to educate us.
Thank you, Alicia.
I turned 65 in November, and I need to know what I need to know about registering for Medicare. I get confused when I look at all the different parts and Advantage Plan and all of that. And so I was wondering if you could just give me a quick primer on Medicare, what I need to take into consideration before enrolling.
Yeah. Well, I think the key is you want to make sure that, first of all, that you are enrolling as soon as you can, which is the period that begins 3 months before and extends 3 months after reaching age 65. Many people who are late to do so will have to pay a penalty every year for the rest of their lives in the form of higher premiums. So if you fail to enroll during your initial enrollment period, you can always enroll during the general enrollment period, which is January 1st through March 31 of each year, though that coverage doesn't begin until July and the late penalty may apply. The general enrollment period is also when you can switch between different types of Medicare plans. So if you want to switch between the original Medicare Parts A and B and the Medicare Advantage plans, that's the time to do that each year. So I think you want to make sure you go ahead and do that sooner rather than later. Does that make sense, Alicia?
Yes, it does. Yes, okay. It does. And can you give me a general overview of the different parts?
Yes.
A, B, C, and Advantage?
Sure. Yeah. So Part A is the inpatient hospital coverage. Then you've got B, which is the outpatient and the medical coverage. And then C is an alternate way to receive your Medicare benefits. And then you've got the D, which is the prescription drug. So those are really the pieces that most people are concerned about. And, you know, as you begin to get familiar with it, and there's tons of reading that you can do out there, and I would encourage you to do that just so you understand what you're getting into. Just Google it, and you can find any number of opportunities there. The Medicare Advantage has a fixed network of doctors and hospitals. They're a type of Medicare health plan offered by private companies that contract with Medicare to provide all of your Part A and B, and many of them also offer the prescription drug plan and coverage. So I would absolutely look at those just to see what's there. They also offer extra coverage in many cases, like vision, hearing, and dental, and that's going to be the Medicare C, which is where the Advantage plans come in. So hopefully that gives you just kind of a quick overview as to when you need to do it, what each of the pieces and parts are. And, you know, I would definitely go out, begin to shop around, look at the various options, and get familiar with it as soon as you can.
Thank you, Alicia. We're glad that you called today. Glad you got through as well. Thanks so much. Rob, a quick email. This one's from Carolyn. She says, "Dear Rob and Steve, I need a more reliable car. How can I figure out if I should buy or lease?"
Yeah. Well, you know, we're not big fans of leasing cars here. It's going to be the most expensive years of that car in the sense that you're paying for it when it's going to experience the most depreciation. You've got limited miles. You've got certain wear and tear provisions. You're going to get yourself locked into a monthly payment. I just wouldn't go there. It typically is a very costly way to do it. Instead, buy a 2 or 3 year old, good quality, highly rated car and drive it till the wheels fall off.
All right. Questions@moneywise.org. If you'd like to send an email to Rob, questions@moneywise.org, or call 800-525-7000.
How should we as Christians think about investing? What if we could invest our money in a way that aligns with what we believe? At Eventide, we believe it is possible to love God and love our neighbor in the very practice of investing. We design investments for performance and a better world so you can invest for the future with a sense of wholeness and purpose. We call this investing that makes the world rejoice. More information is available at investeventide.com.
Christian Healthcare Ministries enables believers to show love for one another by sharing each other's health costs. Through CHM's voluntary health cost sharing programs, members uplift each other spiritually and financially. CHM is an eligible option under the Affordable Care Act and a Better Business Bureau accredited charity. Interested? Learn more by calling 800-791-6225 or online at chministries.org.
Hi, I'm Chris Fabry. The Moody Radio Verse of the Week is found in 2 Corinthians 1, 3, and 4. "Praise be to the God and Father of our Lord Jesus Christ, the Father of compassion and the God of all comfort, who comforts us in all our troubles so that we can comfort those in any trouble with the comfort we ourselves receive from God. That's 2 Corinthians 1, 3, and 4, the Moody Radio Verse of the Week.
We all long for something good, true, and secure. There's a hunger for a hope that goes beyond politics and entertainment and reaches deep into our souls. That hunger can only be satisfied by Jesus. For more than 90 years, Moody Radio has faithfully delivered that message of hope to millions so they can take the next step in their walk with Christ.
Call 1-800-DL-MOODY or visit moodyradio.org.
God cares a great deal more about our money than most of us imagine. In fact, Jesus says more about our use of money and possessions than about anything else, including both heaven and hell. In Managing God's Money, author Randy Alcorn breaks it all down in a simple, easy-to-follow format that makes it the perfect reference tool if you're interested in gaining a solid biblical understanding of money, possessions, and eternity. Managing God's Money is available when you click the store button at moneywiselive.org.
With SRN News, I'm John Scott. Wildfires in California have claimed at least six lives and forced tens of thousands of people from their homes. More evacuations are expected as the hot and gusty winds continue. Over 150 buildings have been burned. Tropical storm Laura has formed in the Atlantic Ocean, becoming the latest in an active storm season. U.S. home sales rose a record-breaking 24.7% in July, extending last month's rebound after the coronavirus all but froze the housing market this spring. The National Association of Realtors says that sales of existing homes jumped last month to a seasonally adjusted annual rate of 5.86 million. On Wall Street, stocks finished higher today. The Dow gained 190 points. The NASDAQ ahead 46, and the S&P 500 was up 11. This is SRN News.
Hey, it's a great day to have you listening. Thanks so much for joining us. This is a program all about God's timeless financial wisdom as it meets your financial choices and decisions. If we can help you, give us a buzz, as they say, 800-525-7000. Rick is in Spring Grove, Illinois. Rob, let's say hi there.
Rick, we're so glad you called today. How can we help, sir?
Yeah, hi. Thank you for taking my call. I have a couple of things. I want to talk about the major thing, and then there's other thing related to it. So the first thing is a couple months ago, my wife's uncle passed away, but he didn't have any children, and he didn't have a spouse, so he gave all of his inheritance to my wife and her two sisters.
Okay.
And it's a significant amount of money. He had various accounts. He had CDs and bank accounts, and he had two, like, pension retirement accounts, a health savings account, and just a lot of stuff everywhere, like when we went through his condo. So the first thing is I'm trying to figure out what to do with that money, if I should just try to roll it over into some kind of, you know, IRA or something for my wife, or if we should spend some of it, because I know if you spend all of it or you get a lump sum of it, then there's an issue where it ends up costing you more in taxes or something like that. I've been trying to look it up, and I actually went on your website the other day looking that up. So that's the first thing related to that. And then we also just sold our home recently at the end of July, and what I bought it for and the improvements I made on the house and what we sold it for, there was a profit of maybe $60,000 or $70,000. And so I kind of want to know what to do with that. So both of it's kind of, we got extra money, and but we want to figure out what the best way is to put that money, invest it, or roll it over, or do something with it. So
sure. Well, Rick, I appreciate that. I'm sorry to hear about your family member's passing. Certainly, you want to be a good steward of these resources, and that's why you're calling today. So we're delighted you did. I would encourage you, and I'm going to give you some general thoughts. I'm not an accountant. You obviously need a CPA if you don't have one who can help you navigate all this. I think you also need an investment professional who can really step in, perhaps do some planning with you and your wife in light of these assets that you've come into, and help you not only with the planning side, but the ongoing asset management, just to make sure that you put them to good use, that they're invested in such a way that's consistent with your goals and objectives now that you're the steward of these funds and you're not taking unnecessary risk. Generally speaking, there would not be any tax due on inheritance for the person receiving them. Now, that doesn't mean that an estate may not have taxes, although the threshold is very high. So, for example, in 2020, the federal estate tax exemption is more than $11.5 million for an individual. So most people, their estates doesn't pay any taxes, but they would handle any taxes prior to it reaching the heir. But everything you inherit does not result in taxable income for federal or state income tax purposes for the person receiving the funds. Now, what you're talking about, though, is the what you do with the assets after you receive them, and they eventually will, and sometimes immediately will, create income tax concerns. And so that's where you need to make well-informed decisions to handle the inheritance properly and understand the various types of assets you're receiving. So, for instance, you'll receive cash and securities. Well, the securities, the stocks or other security investments, will have a stepped-up basis, meaning the cost basis becomes the date of death, and then you'll either have a gain or a loss and a resulting taxes, as you move forward. Retirement accounts, you mentioned an IRA, and that one needs to be handled properly, and that gets pretty technical as to whether, you know, who you are related to the person that you're receiving the inheritance from, and what schedule by which do you need or does she need to start taking withdrawals from that IRA. And there's been some changes in that as of late. It will also have to do with her age. But obviously, all the money that's coming out of that account will be taxable as you pull it out. Real estate, art, collectibles, life insurance, I mean, they all have their own considerations from a tax standpoint as well as a management standpoint. So I would just make sure you seek some wise counsel to help you navigate all of this. As to your home, this was a home you were living in, is that right?
Yeah, we were living in it for about 6 years, and I made improvements on the home, and we had purchased it for about $125,000, and then we sold it for $235,000, and but they got a $10,000 credit, so in essence, it's $100,000, but there was probably $30,000 to $40,000 put into it, so it still leaves us with about a $60,000, profit or whatever.
Yeah. Well, the good news there is, as long as you lived in the home 2 out of the last 5 years as your primary residence, you're exempt of capital gains on the first $250,000 for an individual, $500,000 for a married person. So you shouldn't have any capital gains to speak of based on what you're describing.
Rick, it sounds like you and your wife are doing really well on a number of different levels there. One last thing we'd like to mention, when you find yourself in this scenario, which often is just once in a lifetime, you want to make sure that you ask God what he would have you do with a portion of it. We just want to encourage you to be generous as God would have you do that, whether you're involved with a local church or there are other ministries that you support. And we're glad to hear that things are going well for you guys. Thanks very much for your call. Rob, let's squeeze in one more. Spokane, Washington. Hey, Ralph, what's your question?
My question is, I'm retiring in next March, and our financial counselor was telling us about annuities, and I've been talking to people and trying to figure out, so because one person told me annuities are not guaranteed, so is there such a thing as a guaranteed annuity?
Well, essentially, the guarantee comes from the insurance company. And so you're relying on the insurance company. And there are provisions if the insurance company fails by which, the state would step in. But when you hear the word guaranteed annuity, essentially what you're talking about there would be what's called a fixed annuity. And a fixed annuity is basically an annuity that pays a guaranteed, again, according to the insurance company, a guaranteed rate of return on the assets inside the annuity as opposed to what's called a variable annuity, where the return will vary over time based on some underlying performance metric. It could be tied to a particular index or mutual funds as opposed to the fixed annuity, which has a specific interest rate that is applied to the contributions. And then there's two phases of that, Ralph. There's the accumulation phase, where either that guaranteed interest rate or the variable rate produced by the investments underneath it will allow the account to grow. And then eventually you reach the annuitization phase, where you begin to withdraw regular payments, could be monthly, could be annually, from that contract until you die. It's not my favorite way to go. I mean, where it can be helpful for some folks is when they don't want to take the risk of managing or hiring somebody to manage their assets for them, and they want to transfer that risk to the insurance company in exchange for that quote-unquote guaranteed payout. I'd rather you keep access to your funds and just have it managed in a way that's going to produce the income you need and still give you access to the capital, because there's so many limitations with an annuity in terms of getting it out, the fees and expenses and the like.
Great question, Ralph, and we're glad that you called today. Thank you very, very much. This is MoneyWise Live. We'll be right back.
The financial wealth you leave behind could be the best thing that ever happened to your loved ones, or the worst. In Splitting Heirs, giving your money and things to your children without ruining their lives, Ron Blue explains why it's important to make these decisions now, instead of forcing your heirs to do it later. Splitting Heirs will foster a real appreciation for the precious resources that God has entrusted to you. And it's available when you click the store button at moneywiselive.org.
Hi, I'm Barry McGuire. I'm here to help you understand the urgency and how much fun it is to share your faith through the eyes of a layman. Who can imagine where we'll be in another few months? Only God knows that, and that's probably a good thing. If you're hoping for a return to normal, you're probably not going to be happy. But if this world is not your home, you may be home sooner than expected. So what are you going to do in the meantime? Stick our heads in the sand and put our hands over our ears? Watch the news and pray that Jesus comes soon? Shout it from the housetops that the end is near? Or would you like to have the time of your life until the time of your life is over? Having God fill your life with joy, turning every day into an adventure, moving everyone every day closer to Jesus? That's His desire for you, starting right now. There's nothing more exciting than knowing God is using you to move people closer to Him. Join us at IgniteAmerica.com.
Let's be honest. This whole coronavirus thing has a lot of people rattled. The world's in panic mode. So deep down inside, how are you handling it? Hi, I'm Bernie Diamond from ChristianityWorks.com. When all you hear on the news is how bad things are, stock markets crashing, retirement savings evaporating, businesses folding, it's easy to go with the flow. It's easy to let panic set in. Yeah, we know that God's in control. Well, at least in theory. We know that we should have more faith, but, well, you know. King David faced more than his fair share of threats. But right when he was in fear for his very life, this is what he discovered. I sought the Lord, and He answered me, and He delivered me from all my fears. With all my heart, I believe that that's what God is saying to you today. Seek the Lord. He will answer you. He will deliver you from all your fears.
Money and life run on the same track, but unfortunately, sometimes it seems like your money is heading in a different direction from your goals. In Never Enough, Three Keys to Financial Contentment, author Ron Blue helps you to break down all your financial options to a basic four, and then shows you how to keep it all chugging along in the right direction on the same track. Never Enough, Three Keys to Financial Contentment. Available when you click the store button at moneywiselive.org.
And welcome back to MoneyWise Live. Let's go right back to our phones. Randy is calling and listening from Kenai, Alaska.
Randy, thanks for calling today. How can we help?
Hi, thank you so much for taking my call. I really appreciate your ministry. I am 67 years old now. I started taking Social Security at age 65. but I'm still working, and I average about $50,000 a year, and so I'm still paying into Social Security. Will I get increases in my adjustment as I continue to work?
Yes, ma'am. A couple of ways you'll see increases. One is called the COLA, which is the cost of living adjustment. And you would obviously receive that annually based on the what's called the CPIW, which is the factor that the Social Security uses to determine the cost of living increase. But the second would be based on your earnings. So if you had less than 35 years of working, and so therefore you had some zero earnings years, you'll replace those zero earnings years with your new earnings. If you work 35 years or more, then the IRS will check to see if your new year of earnings is higher than the lowest of those 35 years after considering something called indexing, where they kind of adjust them for the current day. And so that gives you a second way to see additional increases, and they'll notify you of that, and they'll pay a one-time check for the increase and then continue paying that higher amount moving forward. So, again, it's going to come down to how your current year's earnings relate to the 35 years that the IRS had been using previously to determine what your payment is going to be.
Randy, thank you very much for calling today. Hope that information helps you. Quickly down to, well, from Alaska to Florida. And Kathy, what's your question?
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
My husband and I have two homes. One of them is our primary, and we have a mortgage on that of about $165,000 left. We've been chipping away at it and paying a little extra toward it. We've got a bunch of equity in this house. We also have an investment property that, unfortunately, we bought when the prices were high. We lived in it at the time. It's now an investment property, and we rent it out. That carries a mortgage of about $330,000. We were trying to get that refinanced, but the question is, would it be wise to, since the rates are lower now, wise to refinance the mortgage on our primary while including the mortgage from the secondary of the investment property and paying that off and then having a lower rate for the whole the whole amount?
Yeah, the challenge here, Kathy, and I certainly can appreciate what you're trying to do, and yes, on paper, that can make some sense just in terms of the total amount that you would be paying and the costs of the interest, because on your primary residence, you're going to get a lower interest rate than an investment property, and you do have good equity, which you already mentioned. The only reason I'm hesitating is because I like to see investment properties handled as a business, separate from your personal finances, in a sense, where you'd make a real concerted effort to get completely out of debt personally, including your home where you live, because technically that's not an investment. Yes, it will appreciate, but the definition of an investment is when it's accomplished its purpose, you sell it. And you don't monitor the ebb and flow of the prices of your home looking to sell it as soon as it's at an optimal price, because it's where you live. It's your home. And I'd also not like for you to put your primary residence at risk if something were to happen in your financial life that were to cause you to be unable to make the payment for that mortgage. I'd rather you have your home and eventually own it free and clear, at least have a lot of equity in it, and then be able to, you know, worst comes to worst, let that investment property go. Not that we'd ever want to do that. You'd obviously want to liquidate it, pay off the mortgage. But I just like to keep these two things separate, given their uses and what they are. Now, there'd be plenty of people out there saying, Rob, that doesn't make any sense, because why would you pay extra interest when you don't have to? And that would be true. There's a cost to doing it this way. I just like for you to have the security and peace of mind to know that you own your home, as opposed to having this large mortgage on your primary residence, even though you'd know you'd have this other asset, even though it's somewhat illiquid, you could sell it and pay off, you know, the first mortgage on that primary residence. Now, all that to say doesn't mean you may not be able to improve your situation with the investment property. Is the investment property cash flowing such that you can cover the debt service and all the expenses related to it?
We've been we've been paying extra toward it for the past few years. Okay. It doesn't, what it rents for doesn't quite cover everything.
Okay. All right. Yeah. So, you know, if you could improve the situation, get a better terms, get a lower rate, ideally you would allow that thing to stand on its own, it cover all of its own expenses, even put something away in reserve to be able to, you know, take care of maintenance and repairs and things like that. Obviously, you're not in that situation, but you're still building equity and it's something you're going to have down the road. Tell me, though, does all that make sense, though, related to keeping these two things separate? And what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, it does. The reason I was asking is we did try to refinance the second property, the rental, but because there's not the appreciation in the real estate over there that we thought there was, the loan to value it's just not going to work out, whereas we have plenty of equity in our primary, it's just sitting there and the rate would be much better on the primary.
Would it make sense, Kathy, to, if you were to only pull a very small portion of it over, would it make sense to refinance given the rate that you have on your primary residence? Could you improve it enough and keep the term at or lower than what it is today? If you just add a little bit to it so that you could go ahead and refinance the investment property as well, but you're not moving 100% of the debt over. Do you follow where I'm going with that?
I do. Yes. You're just saying to add the difference that would bring it to the 80% or actually with 75% loan to value.
Correct.
To our primary and then continue with the refinance separately on the investment property.
That's what I'm thinking, but you'd only want to go to that cost of refinancing your current property and adding a small portion if you could improve your situation on the whole note, meaning I don't want you to extend it, you know, to this longer term. I want you to get a better rate. I want you to be able to justify the cost of the refinance. And if it made sense on its own, then maybe it makes sense to add a little bit to it and get the LTV where it needs to be on the rental property. Just a consideration. You guys may decide, you know what, at the end of the day, we're comfortable putting it all in our primary residence. I just want you to think and pray through that before you make that decision.
Thank you, Kathy. We do appreciate your call today. Great questions. One more, Cleveland, Ohio. Hello, Linda. What can we help you with? Hi, Linda. You with us?
Hello.
Linda in Cleveland. Hi. Hi, are you with us?
Can you hear me?
Yes, ma'am. Go right ahead.
Okay, great. So I'm so glad I get to talk to you guys. I have a really quick question. So I just turned 60, so I'm starting to look at retirement. My retirement goal age is 67. And so what I'd like to do is I've been leasing a car, and I know that's not the best thing, but I've been leasing a car forever, and my lease is up in November. So my goal is to buy a car and have it paid off by the time I retire. And so right now, I've looked at a few options, and I know I've always been told you should never buy a car brand new. However, I have access to the X plan, and right now they have 0% interest. So I wanted to run that by you guys and get your thoughts as far as, am I better off buying a car that's 2 or 3 years or a year or two or whatever years old and be paying interest? Or would it be okay to just get a brand new car and then pay it off with no interest and go that route?
Yeah, Linda, we're not against necessarily buying a new car. I mean, the reason why we say for most people it makes sense to buy a 2 or 3 year old car is because essentially you're missing out on the years where there's the most depreciation that occurs within a car, which is in the first couple of years after you buy it. And so you're buying it on the other side of that. And if you could buy a good, reliable car that you're going to pay off over time and then, own it, drive it as long as you can, it just tends to be cost effective. Now, you're making a fair point here that, you know, perhaps there's a benefit in this 0% financing that you're not going to have with what you borrow to buy the used car. And you need to factor that in. I think the key is whether you buy new or used, that you buy something that fits within your budget. You've really counted the cost. You understand, what type of car you need that's going to be reliable. And if you want to go ahead and buy the new car, it fits fits into the budget. You take advantage of this 0% financing. What I like about what you're describing that I think makes either one work is you're talking about buying something and then driving it for a really long time. And, you know, that's the way we approach new cars. The last minivan we let go of, we had 235,000 miles on it. And I just think that's a cost-effective way to do it. So no problem in buying new. Again, just make sure it fits into your budget and you're not stretching to buy something because cars are fairly expensive these days.
Linda, we're glad that you got through today. Thanks for your kind words. And we appreciate your phone call. Thanks very, very much. And with that, Rob, we're pretty much going to put a bow on it. I'd like to mention one more time the MoneyWise e-magazine. It's something that's fairly new to us and for our listeners. Mm-hmm. It's a quarterly publication, special podcasts within that publication, articles, stories that'll inspire you, encourage you, and challenge you. And best of all, Rob, is the subscription rate is pretty good these days, don't you?
Well, yeah, we just cut it in half. It was zero, and it's still zero.
Free.
So sign up, moneywiselive.org. Let me also mention, we'd love for you to prayerfully consider supporting this ministry. We can't do what we do without your generous support. Just click donate at moneywiselive.org.
Thanks very much, Rob. MoneyWise Live is a partnership between Moody Radio and MoneyWise Media. My thanks to Amy, Judy, Gabby T., and Jim Henry for their assistance today. Thank you for listening. Have a wonderful weekend. Join us again on Monday.